Good morning, everyone. Great to be with you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm from a town in the UK called Swindon. It's about 70 miles southwest of London, and I was born just outside London, so JR was absolutely accurate with that. But really looking forward to sharing with you this morning a little bit of my story, but more importantly, really what God is doing in the nation of Burundi. But just before I get into that, I just want to say we've prayed for you in the UK, and we're really excited about the churches here that are part of Regions Beyond and part of our family. And I just wanted to extend personal thanks, because I think last year or maybe the year before, you took part in an offering for Burundi to help our friends there in crisis. And so I just want to say thank you so much for your generosity. I'll be sharing with you this morning how we use those funds. But bless you, and thank you so much for having me. Okay, so Burundi. I have been involved in Burundi for nearly 20 years, but when I was first invited to go there in 1998, I wasn't actually sure where it was. I thought it was in Africa. I'd met a lady who'd invited me to go. I was a teacher at that time, and then the lady had invited me to come and teach children that she was caring for. She was taking in orphans, and they were growing up, and she wanted them to have an education. And so she invited me to go. I was at a Bible week at the time, and I remember ringing one of my friends and saying, "Is Burundi in Africa?" And found out that it was. So Burundi, as you can see on that map there, tiny, weeny little country right in the heart of Central Africa. Very small, but God has given us really big promises. Will this work if I'm pinging it? Have I done something wrong? Is it on? I have an aversion to technology. I'm rubbish with it. Thank you. Way, okay. So, 1999, I went off to Burundi for the first time, very, very naive. Before that, I'd just been in Africa for 2 weeks. But I kind of always had the nations in my heart. I think even before I was saved, God was stirring me for the nations, but I didn't really know what that looked like. And so, 1999, aged 32, I went off to Burundi to teach 18 children, so I thought. And when I got there, I found myself working with children in two houses, two orphanages. There were about 50 children in all, and it was fairly chaotic, as you can imagine. Burundi at that point was in the middle of a civil war between the two tribes, the Hutus and the Tutsis. And the children that we were working with were often war orphans or had been abandoned. And so you can see there many little babies. There were many stories of babies that you would just think wouldn't live other than by the grace of God. One little child that we had, Grace, her name was Grace, had been found down the U-bend of a toilet, and she was rescued. And she's just graduated in the States, actually, in journalism, and God's plans are amazing. So we really saw the hand of God on the children there. My particular role was initially to be a teacher. I went with another lady, and a few weeks after being there, the other lady left, and the director of the organization that I was working with, which was African Revival Ministries at that time, said to me, "Donna, we're setting up an international school, and you're the person to do it." And my reaction was, "God, you've got me here under false pretenses." I just had no idea. I taught in the UK for 11 years before I went, but sitting in front of kids that had not had a background in education, had not been in school, were severely traumatized, was a whole different experience. They didn't speak English. And I remember just on my first day when I just sat in front of the kids thinking, "I don't think I know how to do this." And that was the beginning of a very important lesson that I've learned and am still learning day by day, is that, you know, it's not about that we're qualified in ourselves. You know, God calls and he equips and he anoints and he enables. And that really has been my testimony, in that we just need to depend on God and let him lead us. And actually, I think we're in the best position when we know how weak we are, because then we don't try to do it by ourselves. And I certainly couldn't. I really hadn't got a clue. But by the grace of God, the school grew, and we saw God doing amazing things among the children. I want to tell you about this particular young lad, Marungwa, who was 8 when I first went to Burundi. You can see him pictured there, the older of the two boys in the middle picture, because I want to just tell you his story, really, as we go through this morning. Marungwa was an orphan. He wasn't actually a war orphan. He'd come down to the city with his mum, who needed medical care, and his mum had died in the hospital, and Marungwa didn't know where he was from and was just found sleeping rough by one of the husband of the one of the ladies on our team, and he was brought to the orphanage. And he was 8 years old. He was absolutely terrified. He'd heard that white people were cannibals. I mean, imagine, must have been so traumatic for him. And I had really quite an instant connection with Marungwa and some of the other kids, and had really wanted to adopt them, but it wasn't possible. I was single then, I'm still single now, but it wasn't possible to adopt them, but there was kind of a special bond. Let me tell you about the other child in the centre, the one dressed in the blue. That's Badusi. Badusi had watched his father be killed in front of him in the war, and he'd actually been forced to eat parts of his father. And these were the horrific things that were going on at the time in Burundi, just horrendous things. And it didn't really, it wasn't really heard about in the world. You know, Rwanda got the attention of the world, and rightly so, because what happened there was horrific. But there were dreadful things going on in Burundi that really nobody knew about. And Badusi, the child who had seen that trauma, is absolutely amazing. The most gracious, forgiving child. That, I mean, he's now 20-odd, but he just has the most beautiful nature, and it's like only God can transform lives. And for me, working with these kids, I began to see a God who is who he said he is. You know, before I went to Burundi, I knew things in theory. And then when I got to Burundi, it's like I began to see this God that can change lives and enable people to forgive, even in the most horrific of circumstances. Now, skipping forwards, I spent 3 years in Burundi and thought I was going forever. I'd given up my job and everything at home, and God spoke to me and sent me back. And it was one of the hardest times ever, because it made no sense. And while I'd been living in Burundi, God had given many promises about church planting and about bringing transformation. And then God said, go back. And I was like, what was all that about, God? Did I get that wrong? You know, did I hear you wrong? Did I make it up? And it was really hard to leave and go back to nothing. I felt God told me not to go back into teaching. I felt he told me not to get full-time accommodation. And, you know, I literally just went back to nothing. And just many, many questions. But gradually, God began to unfold his plans. I ended up working for the New Frontiers group of churches, and God took me on a steep learning curve of seeing the church in action around the world. I had the privilege of running short-term mission teams, and sometimes I would travel with them. And I began to see the church in action, and I began to realize that actually God's way of bringing transformation is through his body, the church. And that was a really vital time for me. Then, to cut a long story short, in 2010, having had no contact with the children for 9 years since I'd left, I got a Facebook message from Marungwa, who at that point was 20. And Marungwa, who's pictured there, he said, why did you leave? I wanted you to be my mum. And yeah, and I was like heartbroken. I'm like, oh my gosh, what have I done to these kids? You know, they didn't know why understand why I had to leave. And it began to stir in me that I wanted to go back, really, to explain to the kids why I'd had to leave. But Burundi had remained in my heart, but I genuinely never thought I would ever go back. I just thought I'd got it all wrong. And then one day, I felt like God spoke to me really clearly, go back to Burundi. My reaction was, I think I must be going crazy. So I rang up my pastor, Mark, and I just like, Mark, do you think I'm crazy? I feel like God's telling me to go back to Burundi. And Mark said to me, Don, I often think you're crazy, but but you do hear God. He's like, why don't you just go back and see what God will do? And so amazingly, that is what I did. This was in 2010. Now, when I got back to Burundi, I met up with a man called Everest, who's pictured there on the hillside. Everest had been our school administrator when I'd set up the school. And Everest had always told me I'd come back to Burundi. And he's like, no, your heart's here. You know, God wants you here. And I'm like, no, 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 no. Anyway, so when I went back in 2010, Everest said to me, Donna, let me take you to my home village. Because when I'd lived there in the war, I'd not really seen most of Burundi. So most of Burundi is rural. 95% of people live off the land in the rural communities. And I'd never been able to go. Once we'd tried to go up country to the rural areas, we got caught in crossfire and that our team was not allowed out of the city. So all the time I'd lived in Burundi, I'd never really seen proper Burundi. So of course I jumped at the chance to go and see rural Burundi. And it proved to be incredibly significant. So Everest took me to the village where he'd grown up. He took me up onto what he calls Prayer Mountain. And he shared with me a promise that God had given him. Now, in this particular spot in Burundi, you can look out over Tanzania, Rwanda, and Congo. And as we stood on that mountaintop that day, Everest said to me, Donna, God has given me a promise. A promise that I will see transformation wherever my eyes can see. And so you look out and you just see these nations all around. And in that moment, I'm just like, yeah, I believe that this is God. And so I said to Everest, it's like, what is this? How are you going to see this happen? And he said, Donna, I believe it's transformation of people's hearts, and I believe it's transformation of the land. And he said, but I don't know how to do it. And I said to him, Everest, do you think you'll start a church here? And he said, for sure, God has told me I must model something different. Burundi is very Christianized, but Christianity is actually really shallow, and there's no real expression of New Testament church. It's very legalistic, very religious. And so Everest had that in his heart, but he said, I don't know how to do that. And I felt, okay, I'm here. I think I can link him up with some people. And we were able to link up Everest with Steve Oliver even before Regions Beyond existed, and just say to Steve, you know, can you help us? And Steve's like, yeah, we're with you in this. We can help you with this. And then I said to Everest, you know, what about transformation of the land? And Everest said to me, he said, I want to start something called Farming God's Way. Now, Farming God's Way is a way of farming that's based on biblical principles pioneered in Zimbabwe by a man called Brian Aldreve. And basically, you get 10 times the yield of normal farming. And so in Zimbabwe, this way of farming was kind of at the forefront of the nation in crisis through the church, where they're teaching people to farm in this way so that families could feed themselves. And at that point, it was beginning to be used around the world and on a commercial scale. And I'd actually been working with the team in Zimbabwe. In fact, I thought I was moving to Zimbabwe at this point, but God had other ideas. But whenever he said, I don't know how to find out about Farming God's Way, I was able to say, I think I can help you with that one. And at that moment, as I stood on that mountaintop, I knew that God was calling me to get behind Everest. And when I lived in Burundi, God had given me a vision that I call Hope for Tomorrow. I felt he gave me those words. And it was a vision to see his heart demonstrated practically around the nations. It wasn't particularly for Burundi. It was very vast. I was very naive. I got very excited about it at the time, and I was ready to go and change the world. And then God said to me, no, I don't want you to do anything other than pray. And that's how it was for 9 years. And they were really difficult years, actually. And just before I'd gone to Burundi, I felt God had said to me, give yourself to this vision and trust me to provide. So I had no income, and it was a real step of faith in seeing what God would do. And those, until I'm now employed since April, but from 2010 up to this April, living by faith financially and seeing God provide for every flight to Burundi and every bill and maintaining my house in the UK, but also having a base in Burundi. And God is faithful. When God calls, he really does enable. And so in that moment, having had friends and kind of my closest people around me saying, you know, before I'd gone to Burundi, they're like, come on, Donna, I think you've, you know, this is a bit ridiculous now. This is a bit crazy. Come on, you've tried this thing long enough and nothing's really happening. But because God had spoken to me really dramatically, I knew that he'd put this Hope for Tomorrow vision in my heart. And it was about getting behind local people and enabling them to bring change in their own nation. And so as I stood on that mountainside that day, I'm like, okay, God, you brought me here for purpose. Didn't know what that looked like, but I knew that it was God's hand that had taken me there. Now, at that point, Everest said to me, he said, Donna, God has spoken to me that the problem here in Burundi is cows, and the answer is cows. And, Burundi has those traditional long-horned Ankole cattle. And Everest said, you know, they're bad cows. They overgraze the land. They don't give much milk. And most importantly, people treat them as status symbols. And so Burundi is one of the poorest nations in the world. It's usually in the bottom five nations. And yet people will be starving, but they wouldn't kill their cow to eat and give to their family because they see it as a status to own it. And so it was a real mindset issue, and the cows were all across Burundi. But in Everest Village, he's like, I need to show them something different. And so he'd used his own money. He'd bought two Frisian cows from Tanzania. He'd brought them into Burundi, and he sought to set out and show the community that with Frisian cows, you can get 10 to 15 litres of milk a day rather than the 1 to 2 that you get from the Ankole cattle. And for 2 years, he was ridiculed, even though he had long-horned and short-horned penned up all side by side. People were like, no, you're giving them different feeds and you must be doing something different. And 2 years people laughed at him. And that's always been a lesson to me that, you know, sometimes what God is calling us to seems crazy to everybody else. And to take that step of obedience and where people are saying, you know, this is just ridiculous. And yet I think often if something's ridiculous, it's often God in it, because it means we need God to do it and we can't do it on our own. If it makes sense, it's like, I don't know. Do we need the same level of dependence on God and faith? I don't think we do. But anyway, that's not a theological principle. That's just something I've learned. So don't build your life around that. But anyway, so Everest, at the point that I met him in 2010, he told me this story. He said, after 2 years, two families said they wanted these cows. And so he took the milk from the cows down to the city. He processed it in his back garden by boiling it over charcoal and took the money from the sale of the milk in the city up to those families. And within weeks, they were lifted right out of poverty. Having never had an income, they could start to send their kids to school. They could pay medical bills. And so Everest said, this vision that I have for these cows is to go right across the country. And it was very obvious what the benefits were. At that point, he'd got 30 cows up in his village, and people were beginning to catch on and think that they wanted them too. And so he needed more cows. And so I was like, okay, what can I do? I didn't really know. I thought what I can try and start off by doing is raising money for cows. And so that's what I began to do. And then fairly quickly, God began to speak to us about expanding this enterprise, which we now call Milk for Transformation, and to bring in more cows, but to open up distribution outlets across the city, sell milk at an affordable price. Burundi is very malnourished. One in ten die before the age of five. Malnourishment is a major contributory factor in that. And so to be able to have a great source of nutrition available to vulnerable families was going to bring great benefits in the city. So we began to kind of look at how we could scale up the enterprise. And Everest said to me, so actually, we need a solar-powered dairy. I know nothing about anything like this at all, but somehow I ended up in this situation where God put me in contact with an engineer in France, as it happened, and a team of people that worked on designing a partially solar-powered pasteurizing unit for us. It took 2 years. It was a nightmare doing it. We didn't really know what we were doing, even the engineers that had the technical skills. It was more complicated than any of us could have imagined. But you know what? God provided, without us doing any fundraising at all, God provided us with 10 solar-powered fridges and this machine. over £50,000. I had one day where I had a check for £16,000 come through my letterbox. And it's just like, it was amazing how God went before us and made a way. And it was, of course, it was, you know, this wasn't about equipment, but this was about God's heart for his people to see their practical needs met. And it really was astonishing. Now, around this time, Regions Beyond was involved, and we had a little church that had started up in the rural areas. The families that had the cows, we'd preach the gospel, and families were becoming saved. And so we kind of thought that that was where the work would take hold and flourish, and we kind of work out of the rural areas. And then Steve Oliver gathered us together, a group of us together, and he said, "Donna, God's going to give us the answer to Burundi." And I remember thinking, I don't even know what the question is, what the answer is. But sure enough, as we gathered over a number of days, God spoke to us and began to give us strategy. And one of the things that God said was that we were to establish a base in the capital city of Bujumbura. So that really changed our thinking. Just a few months after this, God miraculously provided us with a piece of land on the edge of the city, a place that we call Gate of the City land, because it's at the gate of the city. And this piece of land had been one of the worst sites of one of the worst massacres in Burundi during the war. And we stood on this vast piece of land. We didn't have any money at all. And it was over £100,000 that was needed to buy it. But we felt God gave us a promise that this piece of land would become a place of hope and healing and restoration. And I remember emailing Steve, and I sent him two photos. And one photo was of a tiny little piece of land that we'd looked at, and the other was of this photo here of this big piece of land. And I remember saying to Steve, "Steve, it's over £100,000, but we believe God's given us a promise." And, you know, Steve is an amazing man of faith, and he's like, "That's the one. We need to go for this killing field and to see what God will do for it." And within 6 months, we had been given every penny that we needed and more, actually, to be able to buy this piece of land. And we had about £10,000 over. We were able to give that to one of the churches in Lesotho towards their building. It was amazing what God did. Technology, hang on. Now, one of the things that we have learned is that whenever we seem to advance, very quickly afterwards, we seem to hit a major, major challenge. One of those moments when you're like, you know, again, did we get this right, God? And did you really speak? And over the years, I mean, Steve says this a lot, and it's kind of become a motto of mine. There's no promise without a fight. When God makes a promise, we have to fight to see it come about rather than just give up at the first hurdle. And our piece of land, we just had a Regions Beyond team out for a few days in Burundi. And again, we've been seeking God for strategy, and we felt that the time was coming to start looking to build on our piece of land. We'd had plans drawn up for a training centre that would double up as a church building. And we had plans to teach trades there and teach farming God's way there. And literally within 3 weeks, the whole piece of land was destroyed in major flooding and landslides that hit Burundi, but hit this particular community. It was one of the worst affected areas in Burundi. Now, we didn't know this community at this point, but over 100 people were killed, and their mud huts were just wiped out, completely destroyed. They lost their livelihoods. You know, there's obviously no insurance in Burundi, and people were left traumatized and wearing just the clothes that they were in. And actually, this happened at night, and so many people were even naked, imagine. And the water just came down from the mountainside and cascaded through this community, causing incredible devastation. And that lady there in the centre, Adette, she lost 5 of her 6 children that night in the floods. And she's pictured there with her one remaining daughter, Vanessa, and you can see her house there where the water just came through. And of course, people were traumatized. And as I say, we didn't really know people at this point, but we're like, we can hardly go ahead and build a training center and a church building now. You know, God's heart is is to help our friends in crisis and to reach out to them. And so actually through Regions Beyond, we took up a crisis appeal and we had about £50,000 come in, which was incredible. And we were able to help every single family in that community get back into safe rented accommodation, to give them like a business grant so they could start up their livelihoods again, which were very simple things like selling cabbages or selling tomatoes. But, you know, they had no means to be able to do that themselves. We paid for a trauma counsellor to work with the families that wanted help in the trauma that they were facing. And we began just to visit people and we began just to love people. What can you do in those kind of situations, you know? You just, the heartache was immense. Some people knew God, but, you know, there was, as you can imagine, there was a lot of hopelessness at that time. Now, along this, around the same time, we also came across a community that were known as the Forgotten People. And this community had had their homes destroyed. And we thought at the time that it was actually through the natural disaster, but we... seems to have got a mind of its own. It's probably me. And so this community had... Oh, why is it... Okay, I'm going to put that down and let you guys at the back do something clever if you can and keep it on the one... Okay, let me just carry on. So these guys were oppressed by the government, and the government had basically destroyed all of their homes, accused them of being rebels, put them on a piece of land with nothing. And when I say nothing, I literally mean nothing. No water, no sanitation, no food, no shelter. And so they were living, when we came across them, they were living under bits of cardboard and straw, and they were patrolled by armed guards. So they weren't fenced in, but they were not allowed to leave. They weren't rebels on the whole. I mean, there were probably rebels among them, but they generally weren't rebels. And it was just kind of how Burundi is sometimes, gets things in its head that people are against the government. And so this community had been put there. And when Everest took me there, I thought we were coming to an animal farm. And I don't know about here, but in the UK, we have these like corrugated iron little shelters where our pigs live. And as we drove up, I thought we were coming to an animal farm. And then I realized that it was hundreds and hundreds of people living in the most appalling conditions. And I've never in my life seen people that looked so, so despairing. And they were known as the Forgotten People, and no one was allowed to help them. And we wanted to take food in, and we were told no, we'd be arrested for helping rebels. But we felt God said to us, no, my heart is that these people have food. At this point, people had already died. And so we began to take food in. We found favour with the authorities miraculously. And month by month, and even to this day, actually, we're still sending in food because, you know, the people there had no means of getting their own food. And then with our milk enterprise, we started to provide milk to the children in the camp who were incredibly malnourished. And so we'd send, and we still do now, half a litre of milk from the Milk for Transformation enterprise to these children every day to try to prevent malnourishment. And so there they are. And this is where some of your money went. So thank you so much. And this is making such a difference. I just would like to show you, I have a website, Hope for Tomorrow Global, and if you, actually, go onto Vimeo and search Hope for Tomorrow Global Milk for Transformation, and you'll be able to watch it there. So that video was just really showing you where we're at with the Milk for Transformation enterprise today and the benefits that it's bringing across the city and up in the rural areas. But meanwhile, in our story, in 2015, a political crisis began in Burundi, with the president saying he wanted to stay in power for a third term. He's basically a dictator, and Burundi, the people in Burundi, the young people in Burundi began to rise up and oppose the president. And there was a lot of killing and a lot of fear, and really many, many people fled. Now, Everest, who we were working with at this point, he felt that God was telling him to leave. He had lost 76 members of his family in the genocide before. And at this moment, he just felt that he had to go, that he had to get out of Burundi and take his family to his own, where God had really put our friends on our hearts. And they really are my friends now. And I don't like us kind of talking about the poor as these people. I feel like God's heart is that they're his children, and that makes them our brothers and sisters. And so I really like to refer to them as our friends, rather than just a group of people that are, you know, kind of out there somewhere. And so during this year away, it was one of the hardest times when I'd be like, God, you know, you've called me there, and yet I can't be there. And we continued to send food, we continued to provide milk, but we couldn't be with the people. But God used this time to really speak to me through Isaiah 61. And I'd just like to read to you a few verses. The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me, because the Lord has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the captives and release from darkness for the prisoners, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favour and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn and provide for those who grieve in Zion, to bestow on them a crown of beauty instead of ashes, the oil of gladness instead of mourning, and a garment of praise instead of a spirit of despair. And they will be called oaks of righteousness, a planting of the Lord for the display of his splendor. And God really began to speak to me and said that this was to be our guiding passage, because he wanted to see this kind of transformation, his kingdom coming very practically in Burundi amongst our friends. And I just felt over and over again that God was saying, seek first my kingdom, Jesus will build his church. Seek first the kingdom, Jesus will build his church. And we'd been trying to church plant, and we'd been gathering people and training them, and none of the people that we were gathering would kind of come with us and start something fresh, which is what we were feeling needed to happen. But God's amazing. And a year later, I did actually go back to Burundi, we found a man called Idifonce, who God had really raised up. And Idifonce was saying to the people, you know what? We cried out to God for help after the disaster, and God sent us friends from around the world. And we began to tell Idifonce, you know, this, the food that's come to you and the milk that's come to you is because you have friends in nations all around. It wasn't just from England. As I say, we took up an appeal through regions beyond. And so they began to really discover that God really did hear their prayers, and that God had answered. And through this, many people had been saved. And so when I went back after a year, I was astounded to find this community of believers that were gathering twice a week for praise and worship. And my gosh, do they know how to pray and worship? It was amazing. And giving testimony of what God had done through the disaster. And I was like, man, seek first the kingdom, Jesus will build his church. And we shared with Idifonce, we shared with him the vision that God had given us. He shared with us a dream that God had given him of transformation in Gatunguru. And basically, we're now together. And he, you know, he said, we want to be with you. We want to be together in this. And so now we have a church in Gatunguru called City Gate Church. Alongside this, we also were continuing to work with the people in Chirama, and they came to us and were like, we see something different in you. We see that you apply the word of God. You don't just talk about it. We see that you're genuine and you're authentic. And we shared with them the Regions Beyond values. I saw you had one of the booklets out in your reception area there with our values. And we shared those with them. And they said, you know, we see these and we want to plant a church. Or they didn't use the word plant, but we want to start a church. Will you help us? And so now we have City Gate Chirama as well, which is amazing, as we've been learning what it means to seek first the kingdom and then seeing Jesus raise up people locally that we're working with to plant churches there. Now, on a recent visit to the Chirama community, I missed out saying that last year the Chirama community was destroyed by the government. So these makeshift houses, shelters that people were living in, were completely wiped out. And it was devastating at the time. People were told they were shame on the city, and they were told to just be, they were, you know, kind of sent away and dispersed. But they came back together. They started living in partly built houses in the area that are owned by soldiers who are serving in Somalia. And we felt this real sense of actually God in this. Again, another devastating circumstance for our friends. But they were now free from this hideous camp. And so we began to feel that we could start to move things forward for them. And we met a guy one day called Jean-Claude, and he was sharing with us his testimony. He'd got saved in prison. He'd been in prison for 18 years being a rebel. And they found out that he could run, and then he started to be used by the police to go and catch criminals or whatever. And he developed this passion for sport. And he came to us and he said, I want to raise up young people. I want to stop them going the same way that I went. Can you help? Can you help with football kits? Can you help us get some boots so that our young people can compete nationally? And I'm like, wow, this is amazing. This guy who's lived in this camp for years has got aspirations, and he's got the most amazing testimony. And now this guy, Jean-Claude, is now leading 70 of our youth and discipling them through sport, which I just think is amazing. And as he shared his testimony that day, as we gathered in one of these partly built houses, the presence of God just came down. And to be honest, I was a bit like, oh, we've got so much to do today and I need to get on, and you know, we need to do this business training and this, that and the other. And it was just this sense of God saying, no, actually today is a day of salvation. And so one of our team has got a really evangelistic heart, and so I said to him, Sylvester, share the gospel. And he shared the gospel, and five people got up and just came and knelt in the middle of the room spontaneously. And in that picture there, there's a guy in a pink shirt, and he stood up and he said, I never knew that the mercy of Jesus covered even murder. He's like, I've murdered multiple people. But he met with Jesus that day, and this is what God is doing, and we're seeing the hope of, you know, a hope in Jesus for Burundi. And it was just a glorious, beautiful, beautiful day. Okay. Let me skip forward a little bit. Now, I talked about Foundations for Farming, Farming God's Way, which is now known as Foundations for Farming. And so eventually, after many trials, having wanted to start it back in 2010, we started Foundations for Farming last year. Brought a couple of people over from the UK that had been trained in it. They helped get 20 people up to speed with how to plant maize in this way, which is the staple food in Burundi. Again, it was another one of those moments where there's no promise without a fight. We were very excited about doing this, and on the day before we planted, we found out that Burundi had the armyworm. I don't know, are you familiar with the armyworm? Do you have it in the States? It's a devastating pest that's destroying crops around the world, and we didn't know it was in Burundi, but it goes on maize, and basically it just wipes everything out. And we discovered this the day before we were due to plant, and we're like, God, what do we do now? This is really our, you know, one of the main things for hope for this community is that they can feed themselves. And, you know, we were so excited. We were starting to use our piece of land that we'd bought to train on. And we were cried out to God. And amazingly, we had a text from a friend of mine in the UK who was in not in my home church, but in another church in Bath. And he'd felt to pray that morning in his church for Burundi, but didn't know anything about this armyworm's saga. And one of the people in his church gave the verse from Malachi that says, your crops will not be devoured. And we're like, wow, that is just incredible. And so then we had that kind of moment when you're just like, God, you know, if this is really you, we now need to take a massive step of faith and say we're going to go ahead and plant anyway, even though we could risk, you know, losing everything. But we're like, well, you know, that was clearly God. So we took the faith. We took the step. The next day, we had an email from the team in Zimbabwe that we'd already contacted. And they said, have you tried washing up liquid? We've heard that washing up liquid sprayed on the armyworm will kill them. And so we went and bought a bottle of washing up liquid, and sure enough, the armyworm died. Rwanda, the neighbouring country, has had the army spraying their crops with pesticide to try and control this pest. And yet we cried out to God, and God showed us that by using washing up liquid, we could kill it. And so we went and got a big sprayer, and we went and got loads of bottles of washing up liquid, and we went to the communities all around us, and we offered to spray their crops too. And look what happened. Incredible growth. they did get the army worm, but we sprayed and the army worm died. And those are our friends who learned how to farm. This was only in February of this year. You can see there, those two pictures are literally taken side by side. They're both on our land and the neighbouring plot. So same soil type. Our man's way and God's way. So this farming has become a real testimony in the community. And last season, people were saying to us, what are you doing? You must be adding something to the soil. And we're like, no, we're doing this in God's way. And as you teach people about the methods of foundations for farming, you're also teaching them about the nature of God and who God is. And so people get saved through it. And we recently had a lady who'd come for farming training that she got delivered, saved and healed and baptized in the Holy Spirit all in one morning, and she was farming. And it was just amazing to see God come and people encounter God through this way of farming. The harvest was absolutely abundant. When God makes a promise, God keeps it. And we had over 10 times the average yield from our first demonstration plot. We just harvested again. We're now teaching more people. We just harvested again a couple of weeks ago, and again had 10 times the amount of crops that people would traditionally get. And people are now coming to us in Gatunguru, the previous killing field, and they're like, can you help us? Will you please show us how to farm in this way? And whereas we, as I said, have been giving out food and still continue to, because not everybody knows how to farm in this way at the moment, but where we were giving people food and as grateful as they were, obviously that doesn't give a lot of dignity. And now we're seeing them carry away what they've grown on their heads. And it's just phenomenal to see what God is doing. And there's our group of 50 trainees from Gatunguru and Chirama. We've brought both communities together, and they're standing on that piece of land that was so devastated a few years ago and that truly has become a place of hope and healing and restoration. And it was on that piece of land where that lady was saved that day. And I'm like, God, you're so faithful. You really are fulfilling your promises. And then just very quickly, God has really been speaking to us about his heart for the poor. And in Psalm 113, it talks about the poor being lifted out of the ash heap. And that is very real, and out of the dust. And, you know, our families at the moment in Chirama still don't have homes, and they're living in the dust. But we just felt one day that God led us to this passage in Psalm 113, and we just shared it with the leaders, the Chirama leaders, our church leaders. And we're like, you know what? I think God is saying that he wants you to bring your thinking into line with his word and no longer to see yourselves as victims, but to see yourselves at the forefront of what God is doing in this nation. And they wept, and the Spirit of God just came, and these guys, literally, just five of them, just weeping and weeping and weeping and repenting that they'd seen themselves as victims and saying, no, we now want to be ministers of transformation in this nation. And it's transformed them. And they're now teaching that to the others in the community. And we're seeing God do just phenomenal things. And two of the leaders are now our farming trainers. There's Marungwa, that I mentioned right from the beginning, who is now leading the team in Burundi, and guys with him that have been amongst the poorest of the poor, but God has raised them up, and they're now at the forefront of this Foundations for Farming and what God is doing in Burundi. It really is phenomenal. We have just embarked on a major, major new venture just recently in Burundi, as we're visiting our friends who are living, as I say, in the most appalling conditions. And we just felt God was saying, you know, this is not my heart for my children to live like this, to live in such squalor. You know, literally, there are families of 10 who are trying to live in a little mud room that is like, you use yards here, don't you? Like 3 yards by 3 yards, 3 meters by 3 meters, tiny. And you get families of 6 or 7 or 8 just crammed in there, one room, no sanitation, no water. And we just felt God said, no, this is not my heart. This is the next thing I'm putting before you. It's time for change. And so We are just in the process of buying some land and wanting to stand with our friends to be able to buy this piece of land. We've just taken up an offering in my church in Swindon to buy this piece of land in a place called Mahanda. And our plan is to give every family a piece of land where they can actually build a house. They have the skills to build. They just could never get the land. And also to give them a farming plot that's big enough for them to be able to grow enough crops on to feed their family for a year, 16 metres by 39 metres. It's called a Fumvudsa plot. And so obviously, we're just in the process of buying 6 hectares of land. It's not enough for every family, but God has been teaching us that if we're faithful with what we have, if we're faithful with the small, we can trust him to multiply it. And Steve Oliver just rang me a couple of weeks ago, and I was just sharing this with him. And he's like, Donna, this is amazing. This shows our heart for the poor. And we're going to get everybody across Regions Beyond involved in standing with our friends in Burundi. He's like, let's go build a community. And so that is where we're at this point in the story. We have over 400 families now out of poverty up in the rural areas through the Milk for Transformation enterprise. We're just starting to take it to a new area. We bought another piece of land. We need to build a bigger premises for our Milk for Transformation enterprise so that we can scale up. We have no money. We're trusting God to see what he will do. But yeah, God is on the move. I'll skip that. We're out of time. But what a faithful God. When God promises, he really does keep his word. He really is faithful. So thank you so much.